Welcome to the Old Time Dragnet Show from Boise, Idaho. This is your host, Adam Graham. Welcoming you to our 300th episode of this podcast. If you have a comment, email it to me, box13@greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives and give us a call, 208-991-4783. And become one of our friends on Facebook. Facebook.com/Radio Dragnet. Well, I just mentioned it, 300 podcasts, and that's definitely quite a milestone for us. Didn't look like a couple weeks ago we might make it there, but we did indeed make it. Thank you so much for all your support over the years. Of course, that 300 episodes doesn't just include the weekly episode of Dragnets, but also some of the extra special stuff we've done. Pete Kelly's Blues, Martin and Lewis, Bob Hope, Dragnet-related stuff. Still just very glad to be able to have brought you so much. We're going to be a little longer at the beginning. I apologize for that. We've got a few other things to get to. Our listener support campaign is now underway. Go to support.radiodragnet.com. We've got a good campaign going. The listener support campaign allows listeners to help support the show. Something we started as we, try to work to come up with some solution with economic downturn and the lack of available advertisers and sponsors. Listener support campaign helps towards that end. We've had a few increases in expenses with increasing web hosting, with us getting a managed server, and also paying for some spyware protection. As usual, all donations of $7 or more receive access to our premium site, but donations of $20 or more receive a free copy of my ebook, All I Needed to Know I Learned from Columbo, and an additional thank you gift. Among the thank you gifts we have available, the $20 level will send you a couple of digital downloads of the Twilight Zone radio programs. And we've got a lot of great ones in there, including Terror at 20,000 Feet, To Serve Man, and The Obsolete Man. At the $100 level, we have a modern detective program. A more modern, I should say. It's the Adventures of Harry Nile, The History of Harry Nile, Set 1, which includes the first 23 episodes in chronological episodes of the setting. These are mostly programs from the 1970s, though The Adventures of Harry Nile continue to broadcast from Seattle. And that's at the $100 level. Also at the $100 level, you get 3 free months of Netflix, instant download, or instant watch, I should say. And you can have unlimited streaming of Netflix's library, which as of this recording date includes the Dragnet 1966, 67 series, and the 1950s Dragnet TV series, as well as Adam 12. You can send your donations to PayPal. Also, by U.S. mail, by emailing me at box13@greatdetectives.net. And I'll send you a mailing address, or if you have a Wells Fargo or Bank of America, you can also send us money using the email address, box13@greatdetectives.net. You can learn more, support.radiodragnet.com. And again, thank you so much for all your support over the years, and as we're working through this. Okay, well, we turn now to listener comments regarding our experiment with soundtracks. We're recording this on Wednesday, so we'll be listening for other responses, but so far we've got a favorable leadoff. Joan sends an email. I just listened to the Big Lamp soundtrack, and I found it interesting, just like the other person had said. Yes, you can just listen to the soundtrack and still know what was going on without having to watch the show. So I'm in favor of doing more soundtracks. Then we have this email came to us from Jack, who said, "I really like the TV version replay of The Big Limp. Please put my vote yes for reusing TV versions anytime you want." And then we have a comment on Facebook from Robin, says, "I really liked it, Adam, especially when the judge called the jurors morons. Priceless, indeed." It's interesting that some of the TV viewers on sites where this was posted, including archive.org, didn't quite care for that line. But it's an interesting clip and can be used anytime to signify disapproval of a jury's verdict. Well, thanks so much for the comments, and we'll keep listening for more. But here, we're kind of overdue, so we'll get into today's episode of Dragnet, The Big Tie.
Dragnet.
Ladies and gentlemen, the story you are about to hear is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent. You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned to burglary detail. You get a call that someone has broken into a necktie manufacturer's. A large supply of hand-painted ties have been stolen. Your job? Check it out.
It was Saturday, September 10th. It was hot in Los Angeles. We were working the day watch out of burglary detail. My partner's Frank Smith. The boss is Captain Bernard. My name's Friday. I was on my way into the office, and it was 8:31 a.m. when I got to room 45. Burglary.
Hi, John.
Morning. Anything for us?
Patrol car picked up a couple of high school kids about 3 a.m.
Oh? Yeah.
Found them hanging around a filling station over on Jefferson.
Mm-hmm.
Juvenile's checking them against those other filling station jobs last week. Just to let us know.
Okay.
Oh, it's going to be a scorcher.
Yeah.
You noticed it last night?
Hmm?
The heat.
Oh, yeah, sure I did.
I don't think I slept more than 30 minutes. Wonder about air conditioning the house.
What?
It's pretty expensive, isn't it?
Well, I guess it depends, doesn't it?
Yeah. Be worth it, though, weather like this.
Well, we don't get these spells too often.
I don't know, Joe. Lots of the new houses have air conditioning.
Yeah.
Just the bedroom might not cost too much. You know, one of those portable units.
Mm-hmm. I get it. Burglary Friday. Yes, sir. Just a second. All right, what's the address? All right. Mm-hmm. Yes, sir, I see. Right away. Bye. Tie manufacturing company out on Western. Somebody cleaned them out last night. Over 100 dozen neckties.
Yeah.
Owner says he knows who did it. Frank and I drove out to a small manufacturing shop on Southwestern Avenue. 9:03 a.m. We interviewed the owner, George Prosper. He told us the back door had been forced open during the night and that a large supply of hand-painted neckties had been stolen.
You see right here? The lock's broken.
Yes, sir.
That's how he got in, no mistake about it.
Uh-huh.
You take anything else beside the ties?
Oh, a little cash, $80, $90. But the ties are the important thing.
Oh?
Yeah, they're worth at least $5 a piece retail, all hand-painted, you know.
Yes, sir.
Some of them are worth more, special designs.
Why is that?
Well, they're made up for the individual, one of a kind.
Oh, I see.
Of course, most of the ties he stole weren't specials. They were from our wholesale stock, Christmas orders.
Mm-hmm.
I'll admit it doesn't feel very much like Christmas today, but we have to get our orders filled before the end of October.
Mm-hmm.
I certainly hope you'll be able to get the ties back for us in time.
Yes, sir. You said you had an idea who the thief might be.
Yeah, that's right. Morgan Gilroy.
Well, who's he?
Young fellow used to work for me. I let him go first last week. Just wasn't dependable. Always late in the morning. Careless worker, too.
Yeah, well, why do you blame him for the burglary?
Well, he was very upset when I fired him. Said his wife was having a baby. Said I didn't have any right to let him go without notice.
I see.
Told him I'd warn him often enough. Gave him a whole week's pay, and that seemed more than fair to me.
Did he say anything else?
Well, yeah, he threatened me.
Oh.
Said I'd be sorry I fired him. Said I'd live to regret it.
Uh-huh.
Made quite a scene. Told him if he didn't get out, I'd call the police.
Did he leave then?
Well, not right away. He quieted down some, asked me to change my mind and keep him on. Said he couldn't be out of work now that he had to have a job on kind of the baby.
Mm-hmm.
I told him there are plenty of jobs to be had. If a man really wants work, he can find it.
Yeah.
Different when I was his age. Had to earn your wages.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd take young fellas like Gilroy, careless, irresponsible, always looking for shortcuts, always looking for an easy dollar. Never give value in return.
Yeah.
That's why I'm sure it was him. Just the sort of stunt he'd pull, easy way to earn a dollar.
Well, then he's got something to learn, hasn't he?
Hmm?
This was the hard way. Frank and I called the crime lab. While they checked the premises, we continued to interview the victim, George Prosper. He gave us a description of the suspect, Morgan Gilroy, and Gilroy's home address. He also gave us a detailed description of the stolen property. 10:17 a.m. The lab reported that they were unable to find any useful fingerprints on the Jimmy door. Pictures of the Jimmy marks were taken. There was no other physical evidence. 10:57 a.m. Frank and I drove out to the address Prosper had given us. It was a small apartment house on Fountain Avenue in Hollywood. The Gilroy apartment was number 7.
Yes?
Morgan Gilroy in?
No, he isn't.
You Mrs. Gilroy?
Yes, sir.
We're police officers, ma'am. It's Frank Smith. My name's Friday.
Pleased to meet you.
Be all right if we come in for a minute?
I guess it'll be all right.
Thank you.
I'm sorry I'm not fixed up. I kind of overslept this morning.
Yes, ma'am.
Were you out late last night, Mrs. Gilroy?
No.
How about your husband?
What about him?
Was he out late? Well?
Don't you think you ought to tell me why you want to know?
It's a police matter.
Maybe you'd better talk to Morgan.
Yes, ma'am. Do you know where he is?
At work.
Now, where does he work, Mrs. Gilroy?
For a tire manufacturer.
Which one, do you know?
Prosper's. George Prosper. That's the owner's name.
Mm-hmm.
How long has your husband worked for him?
6 or 7 months.
And that's where he went this morning, did he?
That's where he goes every morning.
Mm-hmm.
Something happened to Morgan?
We'd like to talk to him, that's all.
Then why don't you? I told you where you could find him.
Yes, ma'am.
The Prosper Tie Company. I don't know what the address is, but it's in the phone book.
Well, we just came from there, Miss Gilroy.
Well, I don't understand. Didn't you see Morgan?
Your husband doesn't work for him anymore.
What?
He was let out last week.
What? I don't believe you.
That's what his boss told us.
Well, Morgan would have said something about it.
Yeah.
Oh, you've made a mistake. You must be talking about a different person.
No, ma'am.
Well, it's got to be a mistake. Sure, Morgan gave me his paycheck last night. Every Friday night he gives me his paycheck. He got paid yesterday. The same as every week.
Do you still have the check?
No, not exactly.
What do you mean?
Well, it wasn't the check he gave me, not really.
Oh.
You see, he'd cashed it on his way home from work.
I see.
But it was the usual amount, $80. Mr. Prosper must have paid him.
What time did your husband get home, is he all right?
Last night?
That's right.
He was later than usual.
How late?
If Morgan's in some kind of trouble, I've got a right to know. I've got a right, haven't I?
Suppose you just answer our questions, would you?
He wouldn't have done anything wrong. Not at a time like this. You see, we're going to have a baby.
Nice.
Morgan doesn't even think about anything else. He wants everything to be just perfect when the baby comes. That's why he couldn't have done anything wrong. Do you understand what I'm getting at?
Yes, ma'am.
That's why, whatever it is, well, it just has to be a mistake.
Well, you can help us clear it up.
All right.
What time did he come home?
About 2:15.
A.M.?
Yes, sir.
Did he say where he'd been?
He called from the shop about 5:30 yesterday afternoon. Said they had a rush shipment to get out, that he'd be working late. Told me not to wait up for him.
Had he ever worked this late before?
Once or twice. Not till 2:15, maybe, but till nearly midnight.
Were you awake when he got home?
Yes, sir.
Then you're sure of the time, 2:15.
Yes, sir, I'm sure. See, I couldn't get to sleep. I was kind of worried about him. I guess I kept watching the clock. It was 2:15 when he came in.
What did he say?
He was kind of put out. Provoked about my still being awake. Said I ought to get my rest on account of the baby.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I sort of flared back. I said it was his fault on account of him being out so late. Oh, it wasn't a real fight or anything like that.
Yes, sir.
He said I oughtn't to blame him, that we'd need all the extra money he could make. He took out his wallet and gave me this week's pay, like I told you.
Mm-hmm. Did he bring anything else home with him, Mrs. Gilroy?
With him?
Extra clothes, ties, anything like that?
No.
You mind if I look around the apartment?
Well, I know where everything is. If you'll tell me what you're looking for, maybe I can help you.
That's all right. I can make out. Just the bedroom?
Yes, the bed isn't made.
Don't worry about it.
I wasn't feeling very good this morning.
Yes, ma'am.
Would you like some coffee?
No, ma'am. Thank you.
What about your friend?
No, I don't think so.
Did Mr. Prosper really say he fired Morgan?
Yes, ma'am.
Well, did he say why?
Well, you better ask your husband about that.
Just isn't fair. In a time like this.
Mm-hmm.
You don't appreciate Morgan. None of the people he's worked for.
Yeah.
Man does his best. This is the thanks he gets.
Mrs. Gilroy, these ties belong to your husband?
Well, yes.
You know where he got them?
Sure, there's some he made at the shop. Samples.
I see.
Does he have any more of the same kind?
I don't think so. Don't tell me all this fuss is about a couple of ties.
Well, it's a few more than that, ma'am.
Oh?
100 dozen. Except for the 3 ties which Frank had found in the bedroom, we were unable to turn up anything else that seemed to answer the description of the stolen property. 12:15 p.m. Frank stayed at the Gilroy apartment to wait for the suspect while I drove back to the tie factory. George Prosper identified the ties taken from Gilroy's closet. He said that they were samples manufactured in his plant. He also said that they had been given to the suspect and had not been stolen. 1:36 p.m., I checked Gilroy's name through R&I. They had nothing on him. 2:17 p.m., I returned to the suspect's apartment.
Hi, John.
Hi. Any sign of him?
No, not so far.
Where's Miss Gilroy?
She's lying down.
Oh.
She's taken this pretty hard on all the pieces after you left.
It's a shame.
I guess you can't blame her much.
No.
In the heat and all, she's bound to be upset. Find out anything?
Well, these are Gilroy's ties.
Yeah.
Prosper gave them to him. Says they're somewhat similar to the ones that were stolen, but they're not the same.
Uh-huh.
Now, you want to go out for a sandwich?
Yeah, I guess so. You eat already?
No, I wasn't hungry.
Mm-hmm. Can I bring you back some?
Oh, milkshake, maybe. That'll do it.
Okay. Doctor?
Yeah, fine.
I won't be long.
Frank?
Yeah?
Miss Gilroy's all right, isn't she?
Well, I guess so.
Well, I mean, she doesn't need a doctor or anything like that.
Well, I don't know, Joe.
Well, you'd know more about it than I do.
Well, I suppose if she needs a doctor, she'd call one.
Yeah. Well, hurry it up anyway, will you?
Sure.
I thought I...
Yes, ma'am.
What happened to the other officers?
Went out to get some lunch.
Oh.
Feeling better?
Yes, thank you. The apartment's so stuffy today. But it was.
Yes, ma'am.
No, that isn't what it was at all.
Ma'am?
You and that other poison. It got me so nervous, I don't know whether I'm coming or going.
Well, I'm sorry we had to bother you.
You're just wasting your time. Morgan won't be home before 6 o'clock. He never gets off work and... I can't seem to get it through my head that he's not at the shop.
Yes, ma'am.
But the minute he comes in, I'll telephone you. Or if I hear from him, I promise, the minute he comes in.
Well, it might be better if we wait.
Won't you try to believe me? Morgan's honest, completely honest.
Yes, ma'am.
He hasn't done anything wrong. If he had, I'd know it. He'd have told me.
There was one thing he didn't tell you, Miss Gilroy.
Oh?
That money he brought home last night.
Well?
Where it came from. Frank and I waited in the apartment until the suspect, Morgan Gilroy, came home. 6:17 p.m., we took him into custody and drove him down to the city hall for questioning. He was very uncooperative and for nearly an hour refused to discuss his whereabouts the previous night. 7:08 p.m., we continued the interrogation.
How'd you happen to lose your job last week, Gilroy?
Ask the boss.
He says you weren't dependable.
That's his opinion.
You afraid to tell your wife he fired you?
Who says I didn't tell her?
Did you?
Well, maybe you'll feel more like talking in the morning.
Morning?
That's right.
You can't keep me down here tonight.
Is that right?
You want to drive Judy out of her mind? You saw how she acted when you guys took me in. What are you trying to do to her?
We're not doing anything to her, Gilroy. All we want is some straight answers from you.
It wasn't enough losing my job just when I needed it the most. Now you guys got to crawl on my back, too.
When'd you get your last paycheck?
From Prosper?
Yeah.
The day he fired me?
That was last week sometime.
I guess so.
You gave your wife some money just last night.
So?
You told her it was this week's pay.
Well, I had to tell her something, didn't I?
Yeah.
I didn't want her worrying about me being out of work. I had to tell her something.
Where'd you get the money?
Found it.
Yes.
Maybe it looked like I was stealing, but I wasn't. I was going to tell him I was taking it. It was just a loan. Till I started drawing unemployment. I thought we was buddies, Steve and me. Some buddy turned you over to the cops for a lousy $80.
Who's Steve?
Steve McGill. Isn't that why you picked me up?
When were you with us, McGill?
Last night.
What time?
5 o'clock, huh?
Till when?
It must have been nearly 2. It was a little after when I got home.
Where were you?
I met Steve at a bar over in Vermont.
What's the name of it?
Black Pony.
What'd you do then?
I had a couple of drinks, bite to eat.
Now, go ahead.
Some other guys came in, friends of Steve's. I met him once or twice, too.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody said, let's get up a poker game. I just told him I couldn't afford it. I didn't have any cash to spare. Steve said for me not to worry, that if I ran short, he'd stake me.
Yeah.
We all went over to his place. I did real good for the first couple of hours. Only had $5 to start with. Ran it up to over 100.
Is that right?
They were all ribbing me. About how I was the one that didn't want to play.
Yeah.
Along about midnight, my luck started turning. By 1:30, I was cleaned up. Always seemed to be second high.
Mm-hmm.
Hit a straight, sure as fate somebody else would have a flush, second high.
The game break up at 1:30?
Well, they played on a little longer without me, 15, 20 minutes. I stayed on because I wanted to make a touch from Steve after the other guys went home.
All right, go ahead.
I didn't know how to bring up the subject. Not that Steve can't afford it. He's got plenty of dough, and he won over a couple of hundred in the game.
Mm-hmm.
I was kind of beating around the bush, and all of a sudden I noticed how drunk he was. Couldn't get his pants off.
Mm-hmm.
Just toppled over on the bed and went to sleep. He sure looked like he was asleep.
Mm-hmm.
Money was still laying there on the table where we'd been playing, over $200. I only took 80. That ought to prove I ain't a thief. If I was, I'd have taken it all.
What'd you do then?
I went home.
Did you stop off on the way?
Well, I couldn't have. Ask Judy. She'll tell you. I was there by a little after 2.
Were you in the neighborhood of the tie factory last night?
Not within a half a mile. That's got to do with it, anyway.
Where does this friend of yours live?
Steve?
That's right.
A little street just off Western, Gramercy Place.
You got a telephone?
I guess so.
You know the number?
Not offhand. It must be in the book.
I'll check it, Joe. Last name's McGill, huh?
That's right. What the heck's going on here? You guys didn't even know about Steve. He didn't turn me in. Well, who did?
A lot of ties were stolen last night. Factory you used to work for.
Ties?
That's right.
You think I had something to do with it?
Your ex-boss does.
Well, he hasn't got any right to accuse me.
He threatened to make trouble.
Well, I may have sounded off when he fired me, but it was just talk. How could I make trouble for him?
Somebody did. We were unable to contact the suspect's friend, Steve McGill, until the following morning. He confirmed the story Gilroy had told us and refused to press any charges against him. From McGill, we got the names of the other 3 men who had played cards the night the tie factory was broken into. They also confirmed Gilroy's alibi. Sunday, September 11th, 10:46 a.m. Morgan Gilroy was released. Frank and I went back to the office.
Now we got nothing.
That's right.
You think his wife was telling the truth?
Hmm?
About him getting home at 2:15.
We can't prove he didn't.
No, I guess not.
Well, it seems to be cooling off a little, doesn't it?
Yeah. Probably would have been able to sleep last night, too.
Yeah.
It's my luck.
Well, maybe you can grab a nap this afternoon.
No, I don't feel right when I sleep in the daytime, Joe. Isn't good for a person, you know. Throws your system right out of whack.
Mm.
Except for my brother-in-law, Armin. He can sleep anytime, any place. No strain at all.
Okay. Burglary Friday. Yes, sir. Uh-huh. Yeah, I've got it. When did it happen? I see.
Right.
Bye. Men's clothing store out in Crenshaw. Owner came in this morning to do some work on the books.
Uh-huh.
Somebody jimmied the back door during the night. Stole a supply of suits, slacks, sport coats.
Yeah.
And a batch of hand-painted ties. Frank and I drove out to Nimbo's men's store on Crenshaw Boulevard. We talked to the owner, Carl Nimbo. He showed us how the store had been entered and gave us a description of the stolen merchandise. The thief had apparently followed the same M.O. that had been used in the Prosper Tie Company. We were unable to learn anything more about the suspect's identity. Several days later, a tie shop in Hollywood reported the loss of over 200 knit ties. The following night, a men's clothing store on Wilshire Boulevard was burglarized. Investigation indicated that all these crimes were the work of the same man or men. Burglars who were known to have used similar M.O.s were interrogated. No leads were developed. Monday, September 19th, 8:06 p.m., Frank and I were getting ready to go off duty.
You want to stop by the house on your way home?
No, I'm pretty tired. I think I'll hit the sack early.
We could watch a little TV. It's supposed to be a good fight tonight.
It's too late for that now, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, I guess so. Oh, we could watch something else. You're not going to go to sleep at 8 o'clock, are you?
No.
Well, come on then. I'll get it.
All right.
Burglary Smith. Who? Oh, yes, sir. Sure, I remember. Yes, sir. I see. What's that address? We'll meet you out in front. Right away, yes, sir. Guy owns that tie factory, George Prosper.
Yeah.
He's calling from a bar over on Normandy.
Uh-huh.
One of his stolen ties just walked in.
We drove out to a small bar and grill on the corner of Normandy and Kingsley Drive. George Prosper was standing in front of the place when we pulled up. He walked over to us.
Evening, Mr. Prosper.
Good evening. How are you?
Pretty fair. You sure this is one of your ties now?
Positive, positive. It was a special. Worked out the design myself.
I see.
There isn't another one like it anywhere.
I see. Can you point them out to us?
Mm-hmm. Now, you see? Through the window there? That corner booth?
That one there, huh?
Yeah. Tall fellow sitting alone.
Okay, thanks.
You want me to come in with you?
No, sir. We'll take care of it. We might need you later on, though.
Whatever you say. You know how to get in touch with me.
Yes, sir. Good night.
Good night.
Good night, sir.
Talk to you for a minute.
Okay, sit down. Well?
We're police officers.
Okay.
What's your name?
Trendle. Dick Trendle.
You got a job?
Sure.
Doing what?
CPA.
Public accountant?
That's right.
Must make pretty good money, huh?
What makes you think so?
The way you're dressed.
I'm single. I don't have a lot of expenses.
It's a nice suit.
Thanks.
Remember where you bought it?
Sure, San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
Went up there on my vacation a week ago.
Can we see the label?
Okay. Okay?
Yeah.
One drink?
No, thanks.
My pleasure.
Nope.
You ever been arrested, Trendle?
Sure.
Tell us about it.
Speeding?
Nothing else.
No.
You get that tie up north, too?
No.
Where'd you get it?
Fellow I met a couple of nights ago. Got to talking to him in a bar.
What bar?
One Olympic down toward town. Don't remember the name of it.
What about this fellow?
We were talking. Said he was in the clothing business. Happened to mention my hobby was stamp collecting.
Yeah.
Said sure was a coincidence.
What do you mean by that?
One of his customers was a stamp collector, too. Had the factory make up a special tie for him, designed it like rare postage stamps.
Oh.
This one right here, the one I'm wearing.
Uh-huh.
Offered to sell it to me.
Yeah.
Because a customer was made for it, left L.A.
He had the tie with him?
In his hotel. Took me over there to show me.
What hotel was it?
Oh, I don't know. A little place a couple of blocks away from the bar.
You think you could find it again?
I guess so.
Did you go up to his room?
Yeah, he showed me the tie. Showed me a lot of other clothes, too.
Did you buy anything else?
Nothing else I needed. I stocked up when I was in San Francisco. Didn't need the tie either, but it was a real bargain.
Yeah.
$350, it's all he asked for. Felt like this is worth at least $7 or $8.
Mm-hmm.
Sure couldn't see how he was making any profit selling it at a price like that.
He made a profit.
Well, it doesn't seem possible. It must have cost him more than $350.
No, it didn't.
Huh?
But it will. Dick Trendle gave us a description of the man who had sold him the tie. He agreed to accompany us to the bar where they'd met. 10:17 p.m., Frank and I interviewed the bartender at the BTJ Cafe on Olympic Boulevard. He remembered the suspect and said he had been in several times during the past week. He couldn't tell us his name or address. We left the bar and canvassed the vicinity for the hotel where the suspect had taken Trendle. 10:58 p.m., Trendle identified the Mortenson Hotel as the suspect's residence. Frank and I went inside and talked to the clerk on duty.
To the best of my knowledge, there's only one person staying here who fits that description. That's Mr. Lafferty.
Mm-hmm.
One of the nicest gentlemen you ever meet. He's in the clothing business.
Is he around now?
Let me check his box. Yes, he must be in his room. The key's not here.
What room is that?
It's 212. He's very careful, Mr. Lafferty. Always leaves his key at the desk whenever he goes out.
All right, thanks.
He's generous, too. Generous to a fault.
You don't say.
Sure. See this tie? He gave it to me.
Is that right?
Yeah, it's one of my favorites.
That's too bad.
Hmm?
You may have to give it back. Frank and I walked up to the second floor. Room 212 was at the end of the hall near the fire escape. The transom was open and we could see a light inside the room.
Who is it?
Come on, open up.
Yes, sir. Just a minute.
What can I do for you, Jeff?
Police officer, stand still.
Oh, police. You're wasting your time. I don't believe in firearms.
He's light, Joe.
What did I tell you?
All right, where's the stuff?
I suppose you mean the items I stole?
That's what we mean.
I've already managed to dispose of a good deal of it. What's left is in the closet, in the bureau.
Check.
By the way, the burglar kit's under the bed.
Thanks.
Always believe in cooperating with the police. Things seem to work out better that way.
Yeah.
Although, frankly, I'm surprised you weren't here sooner.
Is that so?
Last week. That's when I was expecting you.
Well, I'm sorry we were late.
Now, looks like we got everything we need, Joe.
All right, let's go.
You didn't overlook the tools.
Don't worry.
Last week, I was certain you'd be here then.
Mm-hmm.
Right after my second job. I've never been able to pull more than two before without being arrested, I mean.
You don't say.
It was four this time, you know.
Yeah, we know.
Four jobs. Well, that's a new record for me.
Well, let's don't let it go to your head, huh?
Oh, I don't take all the credit. If I'd ever worked Los Angeles before, you probably would have found me sooner.
Mm-hmm.
Have to go somewhere else when I get out.
Yeah.
Maybe up north to Seattle. I never worked there.
Mm-hmm.
Might be able to pull five jobs before they catch me. Set myself a new record.
Yeah, well, that's not likely.
You'll see. Just wait till I get out.
We won't be around that long.
The story you've just heard is true. The names were changed to protect the innocent.
On January 7th, trial was held in Department 98, Superior Court of the State of California, in and for the County of Los Angeles. Russell Herbert Lafferty was tried and convicted of burglary in the first degree, four counts. Because of his previous record, he was adjudged to be an habitual criminal and was sentenced to life imprisonment in the state penitentiary, San Quentin, California.
Dragnet, the story of your police force in action, is a presentation of the United States Armed Forces Radio Service.
Welcome back. Well, I had a sense that either the first person didn't do it, or this was going to lead up to kind of a melodramatic sort of conclusion, like happened in the big phone call, where, you know, everything just built up to the final confession. I'm glad, for the sake of that whole young family, that it turned out to be just a wrong identification. That the actual criminal in this case made a really big mistake when he chose as his next state to make his move in one with a law for habitual criminal offenders. Though the easy way in which he gave him up, I don't know if anyone has ever come quite that easily and softly, makes you wish that there was, or makes me wish anyway, that there was some way that you could find something to do with those criminals that didn't involve putting them in prison, because it seems like spending a fortune to lock the guy up, and he's obviously not a physical threat. But on the other hand, they're right that he is a habitual criminal. Maybe if he'd been aware that they had habitual criminal laws, he might not have talked about his plan for the next state he was going to commit his crime in. So it's a difficult situation, and quite a problem that Dragnet once again brings to light. Well, we turn now to listener comments and feedback, and we begin with an email from Haya, who says, "Hello, Adam. I just discovered your Dragnet podcast recently, and discovered the show itself when I found OTR nearly 2 years ago. I like it very much. I like both the plot lines and the quick pace, but usually realistic dialogues. One of the things I like about old-time radio in general is that since I'm blind, I know all the details you sighted people know, because all the information is audible. I had a few questions about the show. My first is, do you know of the TV show Law & Order was inspired in any way by Dragnet? Both seem to be based on real cases, and the dialogue is similar. Also, in both shows, most of the characters do not repeat themselves because it's a different story each time. I think that Dick Wolf would say that Dragnet was definitely a part of the evolution of television and of the crime drama that made Law & Order possible. He actually did his own Dragnet series in the 21st century. I've talked about that I wasn't a huge fan of the result, but definitely he had some respect and appreciation for Dragnet, so I think it definitely played a role, and it was just very key in the evolution of the crime story, because, you know, before Dragnet, we had, you know, a lot of crime melodramas, somewhat really dry procedurals where the characters weren't actually really persons. So I think that Dragnet really just brought the whole police procedural genre forward and made it more entertaining and interesting. A second question is, why on earth do most of the titles of Dragnet shows start with the words "the bait"? It seems kind of funny for me to say something like "the big grandma" or "the big little Jesus." In answer to the question, what you'll find is with a lot of old-time radio programs, they develop naming patterns. For example, on The Adventures of Sam Spade, all the episodes are called capers. So you have the Wheel of Life Caper, the Hail and Farewell Caper. On Johnny Dollar, the episodes are all called Matters. The McCormick Matter, the Sea Legs Matter, the Salt City Matter. I'm kind of excited about getting to do the Bob Bailey Johnny Dollars coming up in a few weeks. Can you tell? But, yeah, that's the answer. It was just the naming scheme that they chose for the story. So for all of the 1950 stories, they used Matters. I could not find a specific, you know, like there was a specific reason, like they wanted to indicate how big the story was. But I would just say, as best I can find out, it just seems to be the naming scheme they used. She concludes with, keep up the good work with your podcast. Loving it so far. From Hiya Simpkin and Guide Dog Pammy. Well, thanks so much for listening out there. We have one more listener comment. Carrie comments over on Facebook, I just watched an episode of the 50s Dragnet TV series. I've been listening to Adam's podcast so long that it was sort of jarring when the music faded at the end of the episode and I didn't hear Adam's voice saying, welcome back. Well, you are too kind, Carrie. Thanks so much for listening and for watching Dragnet. Well, that will actually bring our listener comments to an end. I do want to let you know one other announcement. We are going to go ahead and we will expand the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio, and we'll be adding a sixth show, I think, that fans of Dragnet will really appreciate. We'll have more on that probably in a couple of weeks here. In terms of what the show is going to be, but it will eventually get down to Dragnets on Saturday on the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio, but stay tuned for more details, folks. But that will do it for this week. Andrew Rhines, he does our sound, otrwesterns.com. Ken Curlin provides the opening theme music, kencurlin.com. Follow us on Twitter, Radio Detectives. Be sure and take our listener survey, survey.radiodragnet.com. And become one of our nearly 600 friends on Facebook, facebook.com/radiodragnet. And support our listener support campaign, support.radiodragnet.com. But from Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham, signing off.